the best leaders can use the threat of the future to really shift the present and move into the new future. So yeah, I think it's really important to call it out. And if in doubt, call it out more loudly, I think is probably the best advice I can give to leaders. The cost of inaction starts to exceed the cost of action. So it's almost the do nothing is the most costly thing you can do, because that's sure as hell going to get you to a bad place. I mean, you have the sort of fanciest title, but you have the most flexibility of what the title means.
So I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Sharath. He's the founder of Intrinsic Labs. He's a recognized authority on inflection points and advises leaders and organizations about this. And coming out in January, he's got his latest book, Inflection. Welcome.
Thanks, James. Such a pleasure to be with you on the podcast. So cool to see you again after a while as well.
Yeah, the whole idea of this podcast is sort of going back to tough moments. And if nothing else, that is an inflection point, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be fun to do that. It'd be cathartic. And yeah, if it works, I can also talk about, I really help. Yeah, I've helped probably 100 leaders and their organizations through moments like that. I'll talk about why I call it an inflection moment, but helping them navigate those moments, how to sort of future-proof their success through them and emerge more strongly. And so maybe we can talk more broadly about some of the patterns, some of the lessons learned. I have the book coming out, but also, what can your listeners perhaps apply to their own lives and their own organizational context as well?
Well, maybe we start with, like, what is it that made you focus on inflection point as your focus?
Yeah, so I was a CEO for 15 years, James, and in the last 10 years, I founded an education organization that worked in countries like India, Brazil, Uganda, Indonesia, etc. It reached about 40,000 schools and impacted about 10 million young people and children. And it was an amazing journey. I was a highly imperfect CEO, honestly, proud of what I achieved, but lots of bumps along the road. But when I think of those 10 years, they weren't 10 linear years. It wasn't sort of every year, just get a little bit better, or a little bit faster or stronger. We had these sort of chapters in that organizational life, right? And I think it was really, when I look back at what worked and what didn't work, it was about how well we navigated, or I navigated those inflection moments that really paved success or not actually at those different points. I think a couple of those moments I handled well, one I didn't handle so well. And so I think, going back to it, that idea that not all leadership time is created equal, that we have these outsized moments that, are incredibly influential for ourselves as leaders, but also for the people we help and serve. So I made it my mission in my work life to really help leaders through those moments and help them figure out what makes most sense for them.
And so if there are these sort of, if all time is not equal and there are these moments which have great impact, let's say over a 10-year span, how many roughly you're expecting?
I think it really depends on what sort of sector you're in, how fast the organization is. Is it an upstart? Is it a more traditional organization? They're not fixed time periods. But I'd say in Stir's life, the organization I founded, there were three of those. I'd say really significant ones, James, over that 10-year trajectory. But it could be every couple of years if you're in a high growth. If you're in AI now, for example, it's probably even faster. If you're perhaps the NHS, who I also advise, maybe it's every 4 or 5 years. So I think rather than a time frame, it's recognizing the key dynamic that I think that we want to look out for is this idea. I talk in the book about asteroids and starships. Asteroids are things that hit you from outside, that are changes in your market, your regulatory landscape, your funding environment, the climate overall, geopolitics nowadays, all that stuff. So that stuff outside that comes in and has a profound effect on how you lead. The starship is internal. Maybe there's a board succession or a founder transition or shifts in the leadership team or retention crisis in this kind of the period we're in. Any of those kind of internal triggers. And I think it's recognizing the force of those two things and the interplay between them. Usually one or two are involved, but the biggest inflection moments happen when both happen at the same time. So that's one thing to look out for. You can kind of react to an inflection moment, or you can anticipate one. And in general, I'm a big fan of trying to anticipate one because you have a lot more time to future-proof, really, as well. You can feel the writing on the wall. You can feel these things happening. And that's why I say most of the leaders I work with leaders across every sector, James, from from tech to the arts to, you know, health, you know, the university sector, you name it. And I think the best leaders I work with, they kind of already get a sense that there's a new mountain to climb. And actually, one of the big signs or triggers is you're feeling quite comfortable. You feel like you know everything. That's almost always a harbinger of the fact that something, another mountain's about to appear. And it's probably better to start thinking about how to climb that mountain as quickly as possible before it becomes a problem in itself. I don't know if that resonates with you.
I suppose the thing that strikes me is, no pun intended, like if you've got these, events hitting you as either a starship or a comet, asteroid, sorry. How do you anticipate, if some of these are external factors, how do you anticipate an asteroid, for example?
So I'm thinking about industries where, for example, the, you know, regulations being quite light. So let's take that example. Look at tech as a classic example of that, right? Where things like social media, personal technology, there hasn't been a lot of regulation coming up. We know that that's going to change, right? We know regulators are looking at the AI boom as look at Bletchley Park, but that is the writing on the wall. So I think that one approach on leadership is to say, look, let me put my hand out of the sand and just pretend this is not going to happen and just make hay while the sunshine. That's one approach. That's a very dangerous approach, right? A better approach is to say, look, we know this is going to happen. Let's actually invent the future and start bringing regulators into how we think, because we know that's how we're going to have to operate soon in the years to come. Let's build those capabilities, and the stakes are lower now. Let's try and do that now. And if you think of the biggest stories around inflection moments, look at Netflix and Blockbuster, right? And Blockbuster could see Netflix encroaching. They could see people were struggling to bandwidth starting to fall. They didn't act on that. They wanted to coast and keep comfortable, and that was the death of their business.
It's interesting because I've had those discussions in boardrooms before. It's kind of like what that feels like, sort of the risk of doing nothing is often greater than the risk of doing something, because you can just more easily quantify what the risk of doing something is.
Yeah, and I think when inflection moments, the calculus changes, and I often talk to boards and leaders, James, in that context, that the cost of inaction starts to exceed the cost of action. So it's almost the do nothing is the most costly thing you can do, because that's sure as hell going to get you to a bad place. If you act, you may not get it right first time, but if you build what I call a learning dial into navigating that inflection moment, you can start to iterate and change and adapt as you go, but you are moving forward.
Is that quite a hard conversation to have, that sort of quantifying what the risk of doing nothing is?
I think if you get to a sort of calculus of trying to provide a spreadsheet of what the cost of action is, and I normally realize that's not the client I probably am best placed to work with, James, being honest. The leaders I work with, they're brave, they're courageous, they want to take risks. They want to carve that new frontier, and they don't want to be complacent or play safe really as well. So let me just give you a real example. You're probably familiar with the B Corp movement, the positive, where companies get certification for having positive impact. I've been working with their leadership team in the UK. There's an amazing executive director called Chris Turner. In the UK, about 8 years in, about 3% of UK GDP now goes through the B Corp movement. It's amazing, right? But it would be very tempting to say, look, let's make it 4%, 5%, to just try and grow incrementally. That's not what the team and board want to do. They want to think differently. They want to look at some of the more structural enablers of business being positive and how to play a deeper role in that question. That's what I've been helping them on their inflection moment over the last 6 months. So those are the kind of leaders that I end up usually working with, because they can see the writing on the wall, and they really want to be that pioneer and carve that new ground, create that blue ocean as well.
So it feels like the outcome is not necessarily, the alternate outcome is not necessarily a bad one. It's just less exciting, less good. It's kind of, if you're going to really go for it, you've got to be prepared to risk the present.
Yeah, I think the problem is the present will last for a little while. It might be a year, it might be a couple of years. We never know. We don't actually know, because often we over anticipate how long we can keep doing what we do. But if we know it's not sustainable, it's better to move faster and build the new future. You can still do some of the elements of the present, of course. It doesn't mean you have to go 100% to the new direction. But if you can navigate and create that other track, that other way of working, I think the other thing is just nowadays, it's so important to keep our teams motivated. They're smart. They can see the writing on the wall. If we behave like a defensive incumbent and try not to take any risk, they will start saying, what am I doing here? What's going on? that anxiety itself is one of the reasons why we should act, actually, as well.
It's quite interesting because you see graphs of sort of industry declines, and I think as humans we like to project. We project linearly. We go, it's gone up by 10% this year, go by 10% next year. It's gone down by 10% this year, go down by 10%. And you look at, let's say, CD sales, kind of, they went kind of a little bit down, a little bit down, a little bit down, like sort of half the market dropped out of it. Yeah. I suppose that is the risk of doing nothing, right?
Exactly. And I think the challenge also back to that incremental or linear thinking is that we sort of extrapolate a little bit less or more of what we've been doing already. So if you look at the CD example, we don't imagine that you could digitally stream music, right? Look at what Napster started to do and completely shifted the industry now with Spotify. So I think a lot of the times I find inflection moments are powerful because they give leaders a space to reimagine the future, to completely reinvent where they want to go. It almost gives them that license, because when things are going smoothly, it's often hard to justify to your board or investor story. Why mess with what's already working? That's a typical thing. Actually, when you see this writing on the wall, it gives you a sense. And often I find that many CEOs or leadership teams, they have an inkling of where they would like to go. They have a sense they could do something bigger, deeper, more impactful, faster growth, whatever. But they've never had yet the little bit of the extra conviction to do it. And the urgency of the inflection moment allows them to do that. So tip to anyone listening to this who's a leader, use that burning platform, if you like, powerfully. Use that cost of an action narrative and really say, "This, I've got to act." And this is a great chance to really build and take the organization to a place it wouldn't have got to otherwise.
So the conviction is there. So you say that coming up to this moment before there is an inflection point, the conviction's there already. There's a niggle that there's something to do. You said that the moment itself can help them create the organization impetus to make the change. Mm-hmm. But is there something around helping them create the space to like look into that niggle?
Yeah, and that's what I do day in, day out. Is I create what I call a guided journey. It's a safe space, a reflective space where leaders, leadership teams, often boards, investors, whoever, key stakeholders, staff members, of course, can come in and look at that and really try and figure out where they want to go. So I think, and I talk in the book about, you know, this idea of dial, or, you know, think of a watch where you've got the hour hand, the minute hand, the second hand, and the watch dial. The hour hand is that long-term direction question. And I almost always start working with teams on that question of where do we want to go next? And the key is not to just do something a little bit better or a little bit more incrementally better. It's to carve a new direction. And often I find the best way of carving direction is to think about a perspective on the problem at hand. And think about why, how do you harness the freshness of that perspective? So if you take, for example, take the CD example as a good one, or the music one, there was a really strong perspective of the fact that, you know, music could be ubiquitous. It could be, you know, we could have music anytime, anywhere. We could have all the music in the world on our fingertips at any point in time. And those of you, I remember going to that HMV store in Bond Street and buying those CDs and all stuff when I was a kid, a teenager. It was a complete reinvention of that future. But that sharpness, that perspective, almost the audacity of it, allowed a new business model to emerge. So how do you give yourself license to think about perspective? And I often will kick the tires hard with leadership teams on how are they seeing the problem to begin with? What makes their perspective different? Because that difference in perspective is what gives them the ability to lead. That's why people are listening to them. That's why they want to follow them as well.
So let's say you're in the room with these, with this leader. It sounds like you're not just in the room with a leader. It feels like you're in the room with the team. Mm-hmm. Do you ever find a stage where there are people that just don't believe the elephant's there? They're kind of in denial. There's like half the room is like going, "There's an elephant." And the other half's going, "No, I don't see anything."
Yeah. No. It happens. I think one of the rules I think that I have for running these groups and working together in this way is that, it's this kind of idea that we always want to make sure the last few is heard. So if there's a worry about an elephant, even if it's one person in a group of, in a leadership of 12, let's address the elephant. It's better to do it, make sure we all feel fully able. We can see that. And almost always that one person, there are three or four other people, maybe five or six people actually feel the same thing, just aren't able to voice it. So I do think when that has come up, it's really important to surface it up and create a very safe space, a psychologically safe space where people can bring up these concerns, because they are important. Most people don't do it to grab attention, it's the opposite. So I do think it's really important to listen quite deeply to where people are feeling and feeling anxiety about as well.
So do you feel then often it's the emotional sort of lack of safety that is blocking sort of progress, or is it the rational can't see it?
It's a bit of both. I would almost say that the bigger thing is the emotional side, because I think it's quite scary. I think the way that we were taught, you know, when I was at business school 20 years ago, that leaders have a liability to not know. Well, we're in a world, there's no way that any ultimate leader or a group of leaders can know all the answers. So allowing them to really draw on their collective wisdom, to talk to stakeholders around them, and because their customers, their key partners, their investors, boards, it's so important. So just creating that space to allowing to surface it up can be really important for this.
So from the work you've done, so you've worked with B Corp, you've worked with other companies, are there any sort of examples that you can give of like key inflection moments?
Yeah. So I was working with a tech startup in South Africa, a really amazing group called Zlato. They create a social currency for young people, James. And one of the key things I was working on with the founder with this idea, initially the idea was to reach a lot of young people and offer small kind of micro incentives for them to progress and get into self-employment. South Africa has one of the worst youth unemployment rates in the world, if I take that as sort of example. A lot of the work we were doing together looked at actually what would it be better to have more impact per young person and try and think of repositioning the perspective, say, can we be the people who will really provide a path from where you are now to actually genuine first self-employment? Maybe you set up your own gardening business. And this platform had been getting millions of users. It was amazing, the fastest growing thing in South Africa. So it was very hard to almost sort of jettison that for a while, the cost of inaction. And say, look, let's go a bit slower to go faster. Let's go deeper with a set of users. We can have a transformational impact on their livelihoods and income projections. And that in turn will attract millions of users once that's proven. And it was a very courageous, very young founder, actually, but was able to make that transition. And it's really flying. I was just in conversation with him a few days ago, and just amazing to the sort of progress they make. So again, it takes courage. There's always some sense of loss in the beginning, but it almost always leads to a better place. And I've worked with about 100 leaders now in pretty much every major sector, about 20 countries, and that pattern keeps persisting. Just that little bit of time to reflect, to really go deep, and then build that new mountain.
So you're really trying something I talk about with my clients as well, this idea that it's not about going faster, it's about getting there faster. Mm-hmm. And often we get caught up in the rush, and it's like, I need to do more. I need to be sort of actually just taking that step back, taking that moment or a week, whatever it is, just to really understand where you're trying to go, simplify it.
Yeah.
Massive shortcut.
No, hugely. And so another example, I've been working with the JKS group, a restaurant group in the UK. They have the largest number of Michelin stars in the country. And again, they're going through a really exciting journey of growth, actually, and just be able to just step back with their leadership team and also with them as a whole organization, the whole extended management team. It really created the space for them to think about where they want to go next and the kind of culture they need to build to achieve that growth. How do we, you know, the minute hand is really the question is about how do we maximize team potential towards that new direction? How do we really make sure we're consciously building in what I call the sort of the pillars of authenticity, connection, and excellence into team culture and teams ways of working to enable that.
Can you then almost manufacture your own inflection points? It feels like sort of sometimes it's forced upon us, but it's like pausing, taking a moment, bringing the team together.
Yeah.
You almost control the time of it. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a bit of a Machiavellian sort of element of the book, actually, James, where basically saying, look, there is a point. I think the best leaders can use the threat of the future to really shift the present and move into the new future and build that meantime. So, yeah, I think it's really important to call it out. And if in doubt, call it out more loudly, I think is probably the best advice I can give to leaders. If you can set the time frame around something, that's the smartest way, because also, you know, we are all people as leaders, as CEOs, for example, or founders. We already have a sense of what drives us. And if you're feeling as a leader a little bit of a sense of being, I'm sure you work with clients on this all the time, James, but you're feeling a bit drained, you're feeling a little bit that the tank has been empty, you're not sure why you're going to work or doing what you do, that's almost always a gut feel trigger of there's some underlying inflection moment that you feel you aren't quite addressing. And my advice would trust your instinct. Try and create the space to explore it, think about it, bring your team along. They might be seeing you behaving a bit differently, being as attentive in a meeting or as it used to be. Yeah, don't let that settle as a habit. Try and address it early on.
I think that's a really interesting point. I definitely see that a lot, that sense of I've got this gut niggle. I just don't have time to really dig into it. Yeah. Or like this builds up. And often that's what coaching is, creating that space. People like to really see what's going on for them. But it sounds very much like if it's happening, except with someone who was saying, like, if it's happening for you, it's probably happening to your team. So just calling it out is permission for everyone to express and explore it.
Yeah, and I think there's a beauty, I think, in being that open and vulnerable. I think one of the most important things as leaders we can do is curiosity, of course, but also humility and openness, and showing that we don't have all the answers, that we are worried about something. And, you know, it doesn't always mean, I think what a lot of leaders I work with think is that if I express a problem or a worry, I've got to have the solution. And actually, something I also found the trap of as a CEO myself, and I feel it's almost the opposite, that actually the more important thing is to see the problem, have that perspective on the problem that and why what we're doing isn't quite meeting where we need to meet. And then allow your team to find the answers with you. You don't need to own it all.
Oh, that's so true. I mean, it's so tempting. I'll bring it to the team when I've got it all sorted. Like, okay, what is the problem? Okay, I've scoped the problem. Okay, what's the solution? If it's all happening in your head, it's quite tiring as well. It's so much quicker to do it with your team.
Yeah.
And more empowering.
Yeah, and they own it, and they'll co-create that with you, and it's a lot less lonely. I'm very worried right now, James, with the role of the CEO itself. I do think the modern CEO is trapped between a couple of generations. I'm thinking about a third book at the moment, and it's this idea that I think that those coming into the workforce, coming to leadership, have a very different mind frame of what work, boundaries, all those things can be. Those above them, maybe on boards or investors, maybe perhaps a different generation, they often want more of the same. And I do worry the pressures both upwards and downwards on the CEO now sort of puts them in that squeeze middle. And I do worry that we're going to have a lot of churn of great leaders actually over the coming years because of those pressures. And so if we can make that job a little bit less lonely and help them to work together better with their teams, it's going to be a much more successful chapter for them and for organizations as well.
It's interesting. So you're seeing that with CEOs, because I definitely see that with founders. I mean, they are CEOs, but... Just these unrealistic expectations on themselves and the narrative, as we've shifted from sort of 80s, 90s styles of kind of top-down leadership into this kind of leaders eat last mentality. It's left leaders kind of not eating at all, often.
With some
very real consequences for mental health, which then lead on to impact on their business and their teams and their...
Yeah.
So totally with you on that.
Yeah, they're all the founder. I was running a founders workshop a few weeks ago through a VC, and many of them, some of the companies had closed because of the climate we're in and so on. But also, they went into jobs that I was wondering whether was it really the dream role they had? Were they using the founder experience to craft another level up, or had they retreated a little bit into safety? And I think if they'd had time, while they were running their companies, that was one thing, but also even to figure out, okay, if it doesn't work, what do I really want to do next? What's my next chapter? My own personal inflection moment. You know, there's organizational ones, of course, but also we have our own personal ones. So I think having had time to think about that would have got them to a much better place as well. So I think both the personal and the organizational, those inflection moments intertwine, and we've got to be very conscious of both levels as well.
And that presumably can be triggered by the same thing, or it can be different. You can have those personal and company ones at different times, even as a founder.
Yeah, no. So it could be that your company is going, you know, like gangbusters, but you become a father. I think we talked about this at the beginning. I know we're both fathers. Maybe you feel like, look, that lifestyle is not quite right for you. I think what tends to happen is that there's sort of two options I've seen work quite well. The one that doesn't work is to kind of bury your hand and just keep doing what you're doing and pretend that it's all fine. One option is to say, look, I'm not really ready to stay in the ring. I imagine you're boxing in the ring. I just don't have the energy to box anymore. Let me come out of the ring for a while and maybe I'll come back in it when, you know, that really important life event has sort of, my child has got older and in school or whatever. The other option is to say, look, I can redesign the role of the founder, CEO, or the founder, to do pretty much whatever I want, right? And, you know, my board chose to me, you have the sort of fanciest title, but you have the most flexibility of what the title means. You can pretty much make it anything. You can surround yourself with other skills and people so you do what you enjoy and also that you're uniquely positioned to do. And so I think you could say, okay, well, I'm not ready. You know, maybe I'm exhausted by the business development stuff, you know, getting partnerships in my tech startup. I'm going to find a director of business development to do that work. And I'm going to be more of the kind of conductor of an orchestra. I want to try and make sure the team plays their instruments well together, that the music is really aligned. So there's so many ways to evolve the role. And what I do a lot of work on is how does the role need to also align where the organization is going?
Mm.
So if it's in hypergrowth, for example, the CEO role cannot stay the same by definition. It just won't work. So how do you engineer that organizational inflection moment and shift your own personal leadership role and accountability at the same time?
But I think first part of the approach is just acknowledging that you can design the role how you want it. I think a lot of us, we assume how the role should be done. We read about how it's been done. We kind of have all these subconscious rules about how we think it should be done, but actually we can consciously decide and build a CEO role that works for us.
Yeah. No, and that should be such an empowering message for founders who are listening to this, that you can pretty much do anything as long as you're contributing and you're doing things that are additive that others can't do. And I think if that culture of kind of what I call job crafting, that, you know, when I went into work, you know, 30 years ago or so, or 25 years ago, there was that job description, which was kind of the Bible, right? You had to go, that was what defined everything. We're no longer in that world. Work is much more fluid. It's much harder to measure. There's a lot more scope to really carve it and think about what's really important there.
Hmm. So if there was one thing that you would leave founders with, a sort of a closing insight, what would it be?
I think first of all, recognize those make or break moments. That recognize that not all leadership time is created equal, that you have those moments in your company's life that will make or break success for many years to come. Learn how to recognize them, look out for those asteroids and starships. And if you do recognize them, and even if it's a gut feel piece of like, I feel something's not quite right, just take it on. You don't have to have all the answers. Work with your team, create a reflective space to confront that and try and look at these elements of long-term direction, team potential towards that direction, culture, and then learning. And in a way, straddle those different time frames as a leader. That's what makes inflection moments hard. You've got to take that long, short, medium-term perspective all at the same time. That will help you systematically do that. But start with the long term. Where are you really trying to go? How do you see the problem you're contributing towards, or the market, or how do you see it differently? And what's the freshness of your perspective on it?
And ultimately, inflection points are an opportunity.
Exactly. So rather than actually be worried about them or see them as sort of failure or something hasn't quite wrong, let's embrace them as that opportunity that, yeah, we can carve a better future. We can climb a higher mountain to come. So there's loss with doing anything differently, but there's also a lot to gain from doing so.
Cool. Thank you very much for today. That was really, really interesting, Jareth.
Thanks, James. And please, if anyone likes this topic, I write a lot about this stuff on LinkedIn. Please connect or follow. And yeah, hopefully the book will also provide a few ideas. But really love working with leaders day in, day out on these questions. It's such a fascinating area to play in.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
As you heard today, coaching opens up a whole range of insights and areas to explore. If you have a potential moment to revisit on the podcast, or just want to learn more about coaching, book in for a 30-minute chat with me at peer-effect.com.